Welcome back to Microsoft Virtual Academy. I'm Jerry Dixon. This is my partner, Darren May.
Partner as in this sense, not in any other.
Yes, of course. Teaching partner.
Indeed.
Darren, we're in Seattle. You know what makes me mad about Seattle?
Aside from their weather?
Seahawk fans drive me crazy with all their yelling. Oh my gosh.
Uh-huh.
They're like 12-year-olds.
They are.
I saw one driving by. He admitted it right on his sticker. I am 12. Yeah, I get it.
Absolutely. So.
And we're back. All right, so this is module 4 of the Microsoft Virtual Academy course around building universal apps in XAML and C#. Remember, this is a complimentary course to the other 3 we have queued up around C#, beginner, and advanced XAML inside store apps as well. Having said that, what are we going to talk about in this module, Darren?
So we're going to talk about an application Solarizer that we kind of conceived as a platform in which to demonstrate some of the potential techniques that you could leverage when you're building a pretty complex Windows Store universal app.
Yep, no question about it. We'll kind of go through the product itself, the piece that we all created. It was a lot of fun to create and exhausting at the same time, I don't mind saying. And then talk about how we took some of the design documents and translated them into the XAML and MVVM solution we came up with. And then we'll just kind of walk through our solution and kind of talk about where we ended up putting things.
Yep.
And we'll just go from there. Perfect.
Yeah. So let's start off with a look at Solarizer. So first of all, a bit of a disclaimer. When we're talking about Solarizer here, we're talking about it as a partially implemented non-trivial universal app. So that's a bit of a mouthful, and it sounds a little bit mealy-mouthed to a certain extent. But what we're trying to communicate here is our intention wasn't to finish a product. Our intention was to explore many of the features and capabilities that you would need to incorporate into a universal app. Yeah. And when we talk about non-trivial, we like you, see a lot of, let's call them 101 style demonstrations, which show you a little snippet of code within an application and doesn't really tell you what it's like to build something that's substantial, that's really what you would consider shippable. You know, Solarizer isn't shippable because it's not complete.
It's not complete.
But in terms of the approaches that we've incorporated in it, you can see, you'll certainly see once we start exploring the solution and the source code, that there is a lot to it.
If anything, I think we've built a solution that developers can kind of steal from, right? Certainly you wouldn't pick this as your next Visual Studio template or anything like that. Yeah. But there is that thing that Darren and Jerry did. I remember they solved it. Let me go steal their thing. And we tried to write everything componentized enough that you really could steal one or two classes and everything would still keep rolling inside another project. So it is nice and reusable. I will say, this is a non-trivial app. As a piece of trivia, Darren, did you realize that Rhode Island is neither a road nor an island?
That's
me. God, can we just take a look at Solarizer? Darren enjoyed his lunch, or meal. He didn't eat lunch, it was a meal. We're international today.
Do, 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 do. Okay, so it's Visual Studio. Which platform should we run through first?
Certainly, Windows Phone.
Let's do Windows Phone. That's a good job because that's the one I prepared earlier. Okay, so what we have here is the application startup. So we went through a...
Wait. What is it? What is it we're...
That's what I'm just about to talk about.
Oh, okay. Carry on. Please.
So we just started up the application Solarizer, and we went through a splash screen which showed a logo and brought us onto a logins page. So let's talk about what the Solarizer application is really to demonstrate.
Yes.
We wanted to conceive an application that was multi-tier, that had a web-based interface and a mobile interface. And so we came up with the idea around there's a company that installs solar panels. And there's a call center where you might call in as a house owner and say, hey, I'd like somebody to come out and evaluate whether my roof is a suitable candidate for solar power installation.
Right.
So they were called into this call center. This call center would create an appointment and would enter in the address and so on. It would be localized. And then this appointment would be dispatched to field service engineers that would then receive a notification that an appointment had been allocated to them, maybe by their location, geofencing and so on and so forth. And they would then proceed out to their series of appointments that have been booked and perform an on-site survey. They would capture photos of the roof. They would perhaps make some notes around size, dimensions, and so on, and determine whether the roof was in fact a candidate for installation of a solar panel or not. And that's really the idea behind this mobile application, is it facilitates the experience from the field agent's perspective on receiving appointments, being able to view their appointments, being able to navigate to those appointment locations, and then being able to perform some sort of on-site survey and then submit it back to the central system.
So even though we're talking about in a universal app really two applications, one for the phone, one for Windows, in this scenario it's three. We have that server-based Windows phone in the field, phone or Windows device, a tablet in the field, as well as phone in the field.
Correct. So the one of the first challenges we wanted to incorporate was we want to be able to deploy it to a specific field service engineer, so we need some sort of identity management. And so we wanted to be able to register a device to a particular user so that notifications could be directed to them and so on and so forth. So we needed to have some sort of logon. Mm-hmm. So when we were looking at this, we elected to use Azure Active Directory as the means of actually creating a centralized account. You could obviously choose to use other sources of authority and so on, but that's what we happened to choose.
You could use Facebook or Windows Live ID or Microsoft account or lots of choices.
Yep.
But you know, if we think about this as a possible line of business application, Active Directory makes plenty of sense. And
absolutely,
AD and cloud obviously makes it even easier for mobile applications.
And one of the nice things we have now in terms of the sort of consolidated platform is that the web authentication broker is now available on the phone as well as on the Windows Store.
Yep.
So we have kind of a consistent experience. The technical details differ a little bit, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the overall talk. So anyway, we start up the application, and because this is a fresh run, we're actually presented with a logon page. So we went from splash, some magic happened, we got presented with the logon.
Let's talk nerd stuff for just a second. We added this logon button because the login process requires a UI, mm-hmm. and this allowed us just to force the pipeline through. The user clicks logon, and they can't do that until there is a UI. Sometimes it seems so simple, but there's a practical reason behind it as well.
Absolutely, and that sometimes is some of the variability as well between the phone and the Windows platform, in that the Windows platform has many more resources available, so some things can happen concurrently during a startup that can't occur on the phone platform.
Perfect.
So we hit login, and we get taken out to the web authentication broker.
Right. This is not a UI that we wrote. This is a UI provided to us by the broker.
One of the things to notice, however, is that this broker does pull in some of the assets from your solution. So you get your logo, and you get your title, and so on and so forth. So now I'm just going to log on with
John. By the way, the logo and title came free. We didn't have to wire that up. The broker looked or queried our application and got it from there.
So very logging nice. In.
Crazy secure.
Exactly. So one of the big differences between the phone and the Windows platform is this concept of continuations, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But on the phone, when that web interface was being presented, our application was actually suspended.
Yeah, with the potential of even being terminated. So there's things you have to account for.
So what we have here is a simple list of appointments. The next appointment is shown at the top with those moving out in time shown below. And we've chosen to have different templates to view these things. But we've also used a very sort of typically Windows Phone presentation in that we've got a pivot with pivot items. So I click on appointments and I can move to appointments. And so here we've got a nice action on the maps. We're showing local data and so on right now. And we have the option to see other appointments down here. We can also resize this map to show different elements.
Let me make a nerd comment for a second. So when you resize it, I notice that the color changes. Another thing that we had to account for was real-time resizing of a map is a performance problem.
Exactly. On the phone, It keeps trying to re-render, which makes this a very, very jerky performance if I'm trying to drag this around. Yeah. So what we do instead is we detect this drag activity is occurring, hide the map, and just render a simple rectangle in its place. Then when I let go, re-enable the map, and it pops up and it renders nicely. Creates a nice seamless experience.
So this is the application hub, then the two pivots in it.
Absolutely. So now if I select an appointment, I go into the appointment specific view. So we see location, so we've got some data here which details relating to the appointment.
And this is important because let's say I'm at the call center. I just sent you this appointment as a job you need to do today.
Mm-hmm. So we then have the ability to show photos. So we have a number of different ways where we can interact with this. We can click on the empty template. We're on the emulator, so this is about the sum total of our photographic capability.
Yep. We can also the continuation, and it's employed again.
Yep. We can also add and remove through interactions on the buttons down here.
Very nice. Very nice. The command bar down there at the bottom.
We also have the ability to pin and unpin, and we'll come back to this later on in another session.
Yeah.
We can move across. This is where we would actually enter in our data. So we can turn around and say whether it's pending or not. We notice we've got undo and save capabilities at the bottom here.
Yeah.
If I change the data, undo and save become enabled. If I undo, we revert back. So we've got a lot of capability, a lot of rich features that we'll talk about a little bit later on in terms of what's in here. Then we have the ability to submit our capability. We can only submit if we've satisfied certain rules, so it has to be either approved or denied. We come across, our submit button is enabled.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot. We'll talk about the implementation of those rules as well. There's a lot of goodness there.
So if we come back, so we've got the back button on the phone. So we hit back and that navigates us back.
Now that seems obvious, but the back button on the phone isn't automatically wired up for applications.
Absolutely, because the back button isn't consistent across both platforms. Therefore, it's a special case that you need to incorporate into your code.
Under the scenes, we use the Prism framework, and it does actually wire the button up and many other things for us. But just out of the box vanilla, you got to do it yourself.
Yep. We also then have the ability to pop up our settings UI. So we have the ability to log out. If you can log into an application, you probably want to be able to log out.
Yep.
We can clear a local database. We'll talk about this a little bit more, but we have an offline data store that's using SQLite. Right now, we're using sample data. If I change this toggle button, then the application switches over to load down data live from the Azure cloud.
We built this because it's faster to test with local data, and it's safer to demo with local data.
Exactly. But all of this is still live. If we go into the appointments, we can see we zoom in, and now we have alternate appointments.
Looks nice.
And actually, if we clear the local DB, that'll work much better.
Okay, great.
So now we've pulled in actual live. So these tiles are being rendered dynamically out on the service.
The Bing Map service gives us all that information.
And now we've actually got our five appointments on a street in Golden.
That's a good job by the call center, getting them side by side.
Exactly, perfectly placed. You know, they are my dream dispatcher. So this is the experience on the phone. So now let's take a look at the same application, but instead we're going to be starting up in the Windows side.
Okay.
So we're going to run this in the simulator. So we've got the splash screen, so we've got the login.
This is reused XAML.
This is reused XAML, so this is the same view. Not that you could tell in the slightest.
All right.
So again, we have the web authentication broker.
All right, here comes.
One of the things to note about this is the customization experience in this broker is not as good as that in the phone.
I agree.
In terms of we don't have the logon, we don't have the logos, and everything along those lines.
Yeah.
The reason you can get away with this to a certain extent is you still have your real estate of your application underneath, so you could choose to position assets above and below to maintain that branding. Whereas on the phone, we've actually exited from our application through suspension.
That's true. All the extra branding on the phone at least maintains the context of where the user is since they don't have the application as reference. All right, you think you typed that correctly?
I'm thinking possibly maybe.
So again, this is going out to Active Directory on Azure, logs us in, and you can tell that it worked, not only because there's a UI, but also in the top right, we have John Smith. That's his full name.
Exactly. Now, you'll notice that that name did not appear on the phone because we didn't want to waste valuable screen real estate with that information. It's highly likely that the person holding the phone knows their name.
But not the person holding the tablet.
Exactly. So Now what we have here is, you see, we have the same idea, but instead of it being on separate views, it's now consolidated into a single view. We have the appointments. We can also see that the map looks considerably different on the desktop environment. And that's something else that we'll touch on later, is the mapping platforms are actually different, and one of the reasons why we have that complex control.
I also see we have nested commands inside the templates. So inside the kind of the hero template, there's three commands that you can interact with.
Absolutely. So we can choose to select one of these. We can select any of these to move around. So let's, for example,
Let's say what the left one is. It's still on that one as well. It's add to calendar.
Yep.
There's a new calendar API, and this kind of shows off how to use that. The next one is getting directions, if you want to get driving directions. Calls out to other apps. So we didn't build this into our application. We just used the APIs to call out to them.
And it strikes me we forgot to install those apps.
Yeah. I mean, it actually go to directions and see what happens. That's what you want to happen. So right now it's calling out to a custom activation protocol, and because it's MS-Drive-something, right?
And you have the great experience to be able to drill straight in.
And install an application that does participate in that protocol.
For some reason it says installing Windows Phone. Look at that.
That sounds terrifying.
It does. Oh, no.
All right, perfect. Ask me later. Thank you. All right, so this is just showing that if you don't have an app, that if you are leveraging an external app and it's not installed, the operating system drives the user into the store to find one that matches and will work for it.
Yeah.
But let's just edit it for now.
Let's edit in. So now we get similar view that we have on the phone. The phone was using a pivot view for location, photos, and survey. Here we can actually present all of this information as a single view where we can scroll around. We also have much more discoverability on the app bar buttons, because we have much more screen real estate, so we don't need to toggle the views and states as we move between the views.
We also opted to start with the command bar open so that you could immediately see that those are there.
Yep. We can dismiss it.
Yep, you can. We didn't lock it in, but it's there with a is open true, and that allows it to
and
be
open.
And
is sticky.
That's right, and is sticky.
And so, again, we have the same ability to interact with our...
There's no continuation on Windows, so when that happened, nothing was suspended. It's just popping up an overlay.
Okay, so we have a consistent kind of user experience here. Again, we have the ability to change these. On the store platform, we have extra visibility that indicates error states and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So if we click on this, we can actually see that status must not be pending. Mm-hmm. So we can change that. That clears the error state, and now enables the submit command.
Yes.
Equally, we have something that says, you've got to have text here.
And so if you don't have any value there, then you're not going to be able to upload it. But we do recognize that you may be making edits, so the save is enabled.
Exactly. So now we can undo that and return back everything to its state. And it's all good to go. So we can navigate back to the home page. Now, as you probably all aware, we have the charms. So if we do a Windows C command, we can bring up the charms. We can go to settings. So we can see settings, about, privacy. We had about and privacy on the phone as well. They were in the secondary menu area of the phone.
That's right. We saw them.
If we click on settings, we got the flyout. So again, we can see that this is this very similar content to we had on the settings. However, because this is the settings flyout control, the ability to reuse the XAML related to this was actually somewhat limited. You could create a user control that was on both of them, that had the data context set to settings model.
Good, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah.
So again, we have a very, very sort of consistent and similar experience, yet it's tailored for each of the devices.
Certainly not an identical experience by any stretch. That's really great. You did a really good job showing that off. That's a cool looking app.
Well, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I want to reiterate now. Let's jump back to slides. I want to reiterate that this is really us proving that what we're talking about can be done, right? We wanted to make sure that as we're saying, go do this, go do this, go do this, not only is it possible to do, but it's practical as well, and you can use it in your app and feel confident that this is a good solution. What this is not is a reference implementation, right? This just simply isn't. This is just a proof of concept, and there's certainly parts around the edges that need to be completed, and there is no company called Solarizer, so there's no into this.
Don't rush out and buy stock.
Yeah, yeah. And that's just kind of the way it rolls. Poor Barry. He's like, his 401k is empty now.
Yeah. You mean Sellerizer is not you guys? Oh.
So now let's talk about kind of the juggle between a designer and a developer. So this is kind of, we started this, what I feel like is the right way, right? Mm-hmm. We didn't open up Visual Studio first. Instead, we sat down, kind of played out some user stories that we knew we would want, and then communicated those over to its designer.
Yep.
They and she gave us the initial mocks.
Yeah, so, you know, a huge shout out to Sarah Vogeli, who sat down and worked with us an awful lot in terms of taking what we conceptualized and actually putting together a number of very nice initial designs and then really polished it. And she really embraced the capabilities of the platform to understand, you know, how to best express the features and functionality we're looking for on both types of devices.
At the same time, I guess also we apologize to her for not doing it perfectly.
Exactly. Because, you know, if we flip to this slot, every design to a certain extent has to be tempered by reality. And some of our reality was we just didn't have time to do all the features that we wanted to do. So some of them got dropped.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So then we get the mock-ups. The first thing that we do is we look at the mock-ups and start thinking, well, I'm a XAML developer. What am I looking at here? Are these controls that I have to build or are these controls that I can reuse?
Exactly. So, you know, if we look at the application hub, for example, Sarah produced a number of very detailed full fidelity comps, which gave us the sizing, what she was looking for in terms of font, information, layout, and so on. And from there, you know, her design was informed by her understanding of the platform.
Yep.
And then we take that, and then we need to decompose this and work out, okay, how can we leverage what we know about the platform, what's optimal about the presentation of this information on the platform, so that we can do the minimum amount of work necessary to achieve the end result.
And what a good experience it was, too, because Sarah hadn't had a lot of previous experience with the entire design language around Windows, and so she dove into that, learned it really quickly, and really enjoyed it, too. That's a common scenario of where designers start to look at the design language that we've put together, and it's nice.
Yeah, absolutely it is. So let's take a look at the Application Hub and kind of break down the design. So you've seen this in action. This is a little bit more detailed in terms of the major areas. So we can see we have this concept of latest and appointments. Mm-hmm. And if we look at the latest section, we've got this idea of a hero tile, which isn't quite the same as the hero images that you often see in some of the designs. We wanted this to be very rich and interactive in terms of capability. There's commands that could be launched there and so on and so forth. So that seems a lot more complex than your typical hero image. So
sure it does.
We had to work out how to deal with that. Then we had the idea that the appointments would be richly interactive with the appointments map would be richly interactive. We got part of the way there, but then, frankly, we had to drop a bunch of features.
Yeah,
but
that's real life.
That's real life, and that's often where we end up being when we're shipping code.
So let's translate this into XAML.
Okay. So on the left-hand side there, we have that image obviously reduced down, and on the right-hand side, this is the XAML representation of this. So let's kind of step through. So we chose overall on the Windows Store that we were going to use the hub.
Yeah.
Now, it's a natural selection for this. Mm-hmm.
It's a good control.
It's a great control. And the great thing about the hub is it's easy to break down your content into these major sections. You know, that's why you have a hub section element. Mm-hmm. And it also gives you a common look and feel for presenting the header and those kind of information.
It's a squirrely control because when you're inside the designer, it's difficult to get into and touch your individual controls in the sections.
It's a challenge because it uses the data templates.
Yeah, it is specially designed inside the tooling, so you can right-click and say edit hub section, and you can go in and kind of monkey with it then. But you can't just go straight to it. So it's just one of those things.
Yeah. So then if we look at the latest section, that's kind of broken down. We have a hero grid view. Now, if you're familiar with the controls that ship, in the platform, you go, hey, there's no hero grid view, there's a grid view. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things we realized was, okay, we actually want to show this interactive hero element, and in order to achieve that, we're going to break this down into a custom control that inherits from hero grid view.
And it's important that we inherit from grid view, the standard grid view,
yep.
because that gives us all the functionality that's there, including all the stuff around accessibility and anything else that it offers as well. So this is definitely not changing the grid view. Really, it's only implementing the variable size wrap grid as the nested panel.
Absolutely. And the other key thing that we're showing here is we're starting with a convention, which is if we're going to inherit from a control, let's leave that control name in the name of the new control so that you can see that level of inheritance.
Yeah, it's a you're right. We were geniuses.
We are.
Were.
And humble.
Are.
Okay.
Are humble.
So then we kind of broke down the hero grid view into its major elements. And so one of the things that you have available is a template selector. Mm-hmm. That's a, it's a control that ships that you can incorporate. And we again extended that further so that we could create a nice succinct syntax for specifying what templates we want to use for the hero template and for the normal template. So again, that's something that's in there. You can dive into the code and see how that's implemented.
Yeah, and this is a standard implementation. Really, it's nothing special. The data template selector already exists, like you said, and all it's really doing is swapping one template for another. So the first item, it receives the hero template, the one that has all the extra fidelity, and all the rest get the normal template. And you could have a third, fourth, fifth, however you want to build your own template selector. Ours is pretty simple.
Pretty simple, but effective. So that was kind of the decomposition that we did on the hero grid view. Now on the appointments, it was fairly simple and straightforward. What we did encounter, though, was the difference between the platforms. Mm-hmm. That there are different mapping solutions on both platforms, and so we wanted to encapsulate that into a single control to abstract the front-end developer away from the complexity and actually build the implementation.
You know, we looked at the map view just a few sections ago.
Yep.
That's the one with a lot of pound ifs and
pound
stuff.
Pound if hell.
Yeah, pound if hell, because it really is a lot of little switching back and forth to get it to work.
Yep.
And so this says controls map view. This isn't a simple inheritance from another type. This is us switching between two different controls depending on which platform.
Yeah, it's basically a lookless control that injects controls that do have a look based upon the context, which is, it's kind of an interesting approach. It works. We could have done it in a number of different ways, but we kind of decided to deliberately leave it with the if-def scenario just to demonstrate that capability.
Yeah.
So another of the examples that we wanted to look at was the record edit scenario. And so again, you've seen this demonstrated in the kind of the brief run-through there that I showed at the beginning of this module. But here we have it seen in all its glory. Whereas, you know, the bottom functionality on the tablet gives you a single contiguous view that has the various sections presented. On the phone, we elected to use a pivot view. One of the things about the pivot view is each of the views, or each of the tabs, I guess you could call it, mm-hmm. pivot items.
Yeah, are it only, is like a tab control.
Yeah, are only realized once you actually navigate to them. So they're actually, it's a much more memory efficient capability to leverage that than it is to use, say, a panorama, which is another Windows Phone control.
Yeah, the panorama is a lot like the hub control,
yep.
right? Where you do a lot of horizontal scrolling.
Yeah, I guess one of the key differences with the panorama versus the hub was the parallax scrolling in the background.
Yeah, which the hub does have.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty great.
Okay, so let's look and see how we chop that one up. So translating this into XAML, so we've just shown two pivot items here. Yeah, because we couldn't fit everything on the slide, basically. So we start off and turn around and say, you know, overall, it's all being encapsulated within a pivot control.
Right.
With a pivot, we have the ability to customize the template, title template, which we did, to show a custom binding, which is the date for the appointment being shown.
Very nice.
We also have a header for each of the pivot items. Mm-hmm. So we had the ability to customize that and bind those as well if we needed to. Then once we get within the first pivot item, so at the top we've got the pivot item for location, we've broken that into a number of parts. So we've got a stack panel that's organizing elements, and then we have a grid that shows the map and another stack panel that shows the details relating to the appointment. We then have another section within the stack panel that shows some text blocks that are just bound to the name and the details of the agent and so on.
I'm glad you're showing the phone here instead of Windows, because if you look at it, a lot of the functionality has been pulled out. We're trying to show kind of a hero picture again, mm-hmm. but we have room for one button, period,
yeah.
right? You can't overdo it. We can put things down in the command bar, but it's neat to see there's a lot of similarity from one platform to another. But they're not identical because you just don't have the real estate.
Exactly. You know, we can't show as many commands across the bottom as you say. So then let's look at the photo grid view. The photo grid view is again within a pivot item.
Yep.
So it's very, very similar to what we had before in terms of a grid view, but notice it's not a hero grid view. This is the base class.
Nice and standard.
What we do have here is an extension that basically handles the scenario where your list is empty to show the plus, which allows us to give that initial default experience. Okay, we don't have any photos, there's nothing to click. Rather than showing a big empty space, show something to interact with.
So this is how we translated it into XAML, and this is what we decided to do. The empty list template controller, we're torn on whether or not we even like it.
Exactly. This was a solution that was available to us to implement quickly. So we ran with it.
Yeah.
It, as with many things.
A refactor is a great option, right? Don't look past the opportunity to improve.
Yeah. Well, as with many things, you know, what works initially, you may identify shortcomings as you proceed further into the implementation. And we did. There's a few things that we don't like about this. So, you know, at some point in time, probably on a version 2 of this product, we'd probably re-implement it to be a bit tidier.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We have to get our contract renewed with Solarizer.
Exactly. You know, hopefully they're happy with the version that we shipped.
Nice.
And so then we have the other template, which is the template that's populated when there is data present.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a nice sort of run through on some aspects of the decomposition exercise you get once you actually see the full comp and breaking it down and saying, okay, how as a front-end developer using XAML am I going to break this down?
Yeah, I think that's what you naturally have to do. When you're walking through the mall and you see all the window dressing on anywhere, it's great to decompose that and figure out how you would build the mall in XAML.
Yep.
Or whatever you're really looking at, not the mall, but just things as you start saying, I could do that with a pivot control. And you'd be surprised, I think, fundamentally speaking, especially in light of how we have our design language, almost everything is accounted for. You can really start kind of pulling it together. And going again, don't forget to go back to your designer. You can definitely push back and say, you know, that's how you want it to look, but if we just tweak it this one little bit, I don't have to customize a control and then figure out everything around it.
Yep, absolutely. Think of it as a conversation. A lot of organizations traditionally have had almost a barrier between those two sort of disciplines and so on. And the reality is it's much more effective to build these applications from a collaborative perspective as opposed to a dictatorial perspective.
Yeah.
Whether it's technical limitations, no, we're not going to do that design, or design, this is really important, we've got to have this pixel aligned right here. You know,
can we drive this point home a little freaking harder? I mean, I feel like we say it constantly, but it's so important.
Well, to me, one of the delights about building with XAML is you can create beautiful applications.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the disadvantages, I think, about how App Store apps were originally positioned was the design language was almost too prescriptive and restricting.
Yeah.
And you ended up with 20,000 apps that looked pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm.
So XAML in and of itself is in no way limiting from that perspective. You can do whatever you damn well like and make gorgeous implementations. But as we've mentioned a couple of times, it's useful to be anchored in a common experience and a common basis so that somebody's not having to learn your app afresh each time.
So for step one, a designer gives you some mock-ups that you're looking at. You have to translate that into the XAML that you're going to be able to render up the UI that they're asking for. Tons of tooling and all of the things you need there. The next step, though, is then to figure out, now what do I need as far as data? And so let's think of this from an MVVM point of view. We've translated into XAML. Now let's translate it into MVVM.
So you throw that out there. What is MVVM?
MVVM, Model View View Model. It is the, we have conveniently, I'll tell you, only one session away. Our next session, we'll talk more detail about MVVM, but even that's not a session where we train you what MVVM is.
Yep.
Again, that's, I would assume a XAML developer already knows what it is, but I will say it's the design pattern for implementing the data-driven views inside a XAML application.
That works as good as any.
Great. All right, so we take a look at the hub control. Here's the hub control and kind of how we break that down. So first, let's think about what are we looking at insofar as views. So remember, model, view, view, model. We don't need to worry about the model right now. We're just the view and the view model, and we'll get into the models later. From the view's point of view, if you look at the phone, there are a few things we need. We have, of course, the main page for both, but inside those main pages, we're individually going to build the two templates, the template that shows there's still sort of a hero image, right? It's the next image on phone, and then we have that hero image as well down in Windows. So those are the two pieces we'll both build separately and probably maintain isolated up in the head projects. Right?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the design for the phone, there's no way we could fit in all of the interactions because we couldn't have the size of touch targets that are necessary to support touch-based button initialization.
Right. Yeah, that's right. They just can't be the same. For view models, so we know we have these two initial pages. We have the main page for home for Windows and the main page for phone. But then we also have this header. So what we didn't show, we probably could have spoken to it, but what we didn't show is the header along the top is a user control that repeats for every page. And it allows us to build that functionality really just one time. So it shows John Smith's name or whoever's logged in, the ability to go to the settings or whatever as well, right? We don't have to do that. And inside that, there are also visual states that listen for the orientation and kind of change the way that it's laid out based on that. So we have it, that will have its own view model, right? We treat that user control as if it is its own view. And so it has a correlating or corresponding header view model, but we also have the main page view model as well. So there's two. And so we know the main page view model is the umbrella view model for the view. Under that, we have the head view model, but we also have a lot of appointment item view models, a lot of little view models. You might think, well, look at this grid. It's a repeater grid. What's it repeating? It's repeating a lot of appointment models. Well, no, that's not what it's doing. It's repeating a lot of appointment item view models. And the reason we do that is it allows us to, within the scope of a single appointment item, have a lot of commands and expose different types of properties so that we can influence the shape of the data. So you give me, let's say, an appointment model from the database that doesn't really match my UI. And so it could go this way. I need you to change this model so that I can really make it drive the UI, because I could say back to you, hey, the user experience defines our application. You need to make that change. But we're going to have version 2. We're going to have version 3. And eventually, the user experience can only drive so much. What is the option that a developer has really to take their model, wrap it inside a view model, and influence the shape of the data?
Yeah. I mean, let's be specific. So if we look at the tablet hub, the latest section, we've got the hero image there, in quotes. Mm-hmm. That is the same data and model as for every other item in that list. So as we complete that top appointment, the next appointment could be automatically displayed in that position on the list. We don't want to go through this whole life cycle of creating new commands and so on and so forth. So all those commands are available. They are just not bound into the template that's being used on the normal grid. They're only being bound into the template that's being used when it's in the hero.
This is extremely useful when you think about the scoping of XAML as well. So right now we have those commands inside a data template, but the data template only recognizes the appointment. It doesn't recognize the entire page. So to have the appointment actually be a view model, it can contain then all of the commands that we want to have relevant to that individual item. If we put the commands instead on the page view model, now we have this weird scoping of how does this one item reach out and actually touch it? And then we have all kinds of extra overhead we have to do that is easily and elegantly solved by nesting view models.
And this again speaks to what we were talking about earlier in terms of thinking through your design before you start churning code and creating XAML and so on. Because you could very easily have headed down a path that turns around and go, okay, and now I'm going to wire up my command. Oh, it's not in scope. How on earth do I get to it? And then you're going to have to refactor and roll a whole bunch of things out again. So Thinking these things through is important.
And we're talking a lot about views. We're talking about a lot about view models. We're going about to go into our MVVM framework in the next section so we can see how all of this is implemented under the hood and how you can use this inside your project as well. What we're not talking about is a giant scaffolding infrastructure that you've just really got to focus to get it all right. It's not like that at all. These frameworks are intended to help you not only isolate your data, but also build your apps more quickly. There are things that you should realize, of course, right? If you have a massive amount of data, gigantic data virtualization that's going on inside your application, sometimes data binding is not the right choice because everything has an impact on performance one way or another. In a typical application, let's say 75% of all the apps out there, you don't even have to think about this, right? Because you already have a small enough implementation that these kind of performance impacts are so trivial it won't make a difference. But if you have these gigantic apps, maybe you need to start thinking them through. I want to say that as a caveat,
yep.
And we're not ignorant of that at all. But for the rest of us, we start building these apps and we're using all of the pieces that honestly are right there inside XAML. XAML not only supports them, but also kind of encourages them by the way it has all the interfaces built in ready to go. Even the controls themselves implement them right out of the box. So it's right there, but there are edge cases where this might be a little bit difficult. Okay, so let's just go through that. A nested view model can isolate commands, customize the shape of your data. It is valuable, and sometimes it's better than using a model instead. And let's see, so the record edit slide, let's work through this real quickly. So this is the same idea.
Very much the same idea. The main difference is, whereas the hub page was an aggregation of many appointment items, the record edit is really just a single appointment. The difference here is it drills in and shows the details around the gallery.
Yeah, yeah.
And provides you additional capabilities to edit, save, submit.
So you can see we still have that header view model because that's a constant across all the pages inside our application. And then, of course, is nested inside that appointment view model. Interesting, though, our appointment view model inherits from our appointment item view model because the appointment item has all the neat stuff like add to calendar and get directions. No reason to repeat that when we could just inherit that into the page view model.
Correct.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Let me ask you a question, Darren. Should every view have a view model? This is kind of a MVVM question, but I think it's a worthwhile one to talk about.
So the answer is it depends. The reality is if you look at, say, views that are showing static content, is there any value in going through and creating
like
a view?
An about page?
Like an about page, like a privacy policy, something along those lines. Privacy policies can be handled in a couple of different ways. It could be a bunch of static XAML content that shows it, or it could be a web view that links out to a browser website location that shows it. Either way, is there a significant amount of interactivity there that warrants creating a view model?
Yeah.
Your mileage may vary. In many cases, I would say no, there isn't.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're using a settings flyout that already deals with the light dismiss capabilities and so on and so forth. You don't have any commands there. When you get onto the phone, you might have a command to show your abouts. But once you're in there, do you have anything that you're really going to do? No, you're going to hit the hardware back button. So again, it's a static display.
I agree. So I mean it. What you have to think is there's an MVVM world out there that tries to make developing easier and make your applications more consistent, but it's not, I mean, you have to understand there's a flexibility. MVVM might be the most flexible design pattern there is. I mean, it really is saying, try this, this works, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
I think that's important. All right, let's open up Visual Studio. Let's look at structuring our solution, right? Because it's important where you put files and important where things end up.
So, here's a view of our solution from Visual Studio. And one of the key things that we've kind of done is we try to make sure that this was organized well. Mm-hmm. So if we take a look at this, we can see that it's pretty readable in terms of how things are set up in this solution. We've created solution folders that represent the client, that represent the server side. We've created something that we know is common across everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we also have our solution items element. So information.txt, for example, we've used time and time again to remind us where Visual Studio extensions are.
What our SQL Server name is.
Exactly. It's a number of common things that we wanted to share as we collaborated asynchronously.
So first, where do the views go? And this is definitely a depends, right? Because we put our views mixed through the shared project and through the Windows Phone project. But what we've done reliably is we put them in the views folder of both. So if you're looking for where the views are, they're in the views folder. There's no getting past it. And maybe it does have a specific XAML, and if it does, then we put it in the head.
Yeah. Same with view models. You know, where do we put the view models? Well, we're trying to share our view models. So the reality is most of those are actually in the shared project.
That's right.
Now, in some cases, we have implemented partial classes. And so there are partial implementations that sit in the appropriate head. For example, we mentioned before that Windows Phone introduces continuations. So we need to have the ability within the views related to Windows Phone, for example, where we add a photo on the appointment detail page in Windows Phone, we open up the gallery browser or the picture folder browser. That's once again suspended our application. So
that sort of logic is unique to Phone. So that's why we've created this partial up in the Phone head for it. In fact, Barry, switch over to mine just for a second. So this is this is the solution as it is right now. In fact, I'm just going to leave it the way it is. And so here's our view models, and each of the view models individually is here. And the reason we put them in folders rather than individual files is because each of them also has a complementary interface that defines it. That's important for us because let me open up, for example, the header one. Let's say main page. So main page both has an interface and the main page implementation. This is what we use at runtime. But then we can go up to our design time data folder right here. And it also has a main page view model implementation, inherits from the exact same interface, but allows us to use this in the designer so that we can have data inside the designer.
Yeah, don't worry too much about the implementation right now. We will cover that in a little bit more detail.
That's right. I was trying not to open the files, just kind of show how we lay things out.
And why don't you open up one of the other head projects and show the partials for one of those?
Yeah, that's a great idea, especially Phone. So we'll be able to do that. I'll open up, and you can see inside there's view models, but they're only, we don't need the folder here, right? Because we don't need to group them together anymore. And so I have a main page partial as well as the appointment page partial. Both of those, I think, are because of continuation.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. All right, so there's view models. If you want to see, for example, where we have styles, so we have styles here. We have that platform XAML that we talked about before. So because I'm in Windows Phone, these are mostly Windows styles. And then we also have Solarizer XAML here. We bring that in as a global resource for all of the styles that are specific just to...
to Solarizer
just
itself.
To Solarizer, that's right.
Where there will be variability between the platforms.
Where there are variability, that's right, where it can't be in shared. That's exactly right. Oh, so then we have other pieces. Let me make sure I'm following
models?
Along. Our models, where our models go. Oh, I'm glad we have that. So let me open up the models folder in the shared first and show that we have we have a couple of things to notice. That part's important. None of these are built with code generation, but you and I used code in... And we'll demo this in the next section. You and I both implemented code generation to build out all of our models so that the properties stay in sync with whatever it is we do to our database. And that was a big deal. And so if you look at appointment, for example, it's only a partial implementation of the appointment class. And actually, we didn't extend it at all. We could delete that and not even notice
it. Yeah, have a look at photo. Is photo...
Perfect. So photo has, it's the same idea though. It's also a partial class. That's because the full implementation is actually two different files. So let me close this up. So this is where we put our models in shared, mostly the extensions. But if I go up to Windows Phone and I look at the models folder there, now I've got a TT file. That's our code generation file. And under that, you can see every single one of them is there. And if we were to look at our source database, these match the database perfectly. If we were going to go into appointment, it's all laid out with every property for us. And all of that is generated by the TT file that's right here. And so we'll talk about TTs in a minute. But the reason they're up in the head and they're not down in the shared project is because TT files are that one exception we talked about.
They just don't get unfolded.
That's right.
If you move them around.
Unfolded. That's a good way to describe it. Then we have this idea of repositories. And tomorrow we're going to step through all of these things in a lot of detail. Now we're just talking about where they go. And so the repository that we have, really the only one that we have, is a local SQLite database. So this is our local SQLite namespace and all of the pieces that we need here, as well as individual repositories for data types. So how we save an appointment is all wrapped up inside this repository. You can see it's built specifically for our application. There are probably other things you could do inside SQLite that we didn't need to implement because our application just does three operations against it. And then there's also this idea of service proxies. And so this is the way we talk out to our services or our web services that use web API. Each of those is wrapped together, as well as using an interface, because we're going to use that for dependency injection that we'll talk about in a couple of sessions.
Yeah, and we have other things like the common view services that we use, and we'll talk about that, as you mentioned, an awful lot, and behaviors and so on. But you can see that there is a substantial amount of code that's in the shared project.
A substantial amount of code. If you hold them side by side, it doesn't even have the same number of folders, and if you were to count the files, it's probably 3 to 1.
Exactly, which means universal projects have really worked for us in terms of maximizing code sharing.
Yeah, they really have.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have plenty of pound ifs and things like that, and mm-hmm. we're still using partials, but those are all in our toolboxes to use, not to avoid.
Exactly.
Okay.
So if we flip back to my deck, so this really is the point that we want to make sure we keep emphasizing, which is as soon as you start getting beyond a non-trivial application, mm-hmm. organizing your source files is as important as developing them, because we built this over a fairly extended period of time.
Yeah.
And this wasn't the only thing that we were doing. We were doing many other things. So every time we came back to it, it was a case of, you know, trying to reboot your brain and get it back in line with actually what you were building. So if we hadn't had a consistent taxonomy of how we organized our various source files and so on, it would have been incrementally harder to get our head around what we were doing and where it was and so on. So please, please, please think about this stuff. Your own filing system may be different from ours, and that's perfectly fine. Just develop one that makes a bunch of sense for you. And if you're working in a collaborative team, get agreement up front. This is how we're going to do it. This is where it's going to be. So that you don't end up with your views in view model mm-hmm. and somebody else's views in view files and somebody else's right. views in this. It just becomes a pain in the butt.
And don't be afraid to look at the way you organize files and change it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you're like, golly, I realize I'm putting everything in one place and it's just, do we need to break that out? Just agree to do it, because the effort, this almost goes back to technical debt. The mm-hmm. effort that you put into it is going to pay back later for sure. You're absolutely right. I could come back into this project and you could say, look at this, and I knew where to find it, right?
Yeah.
I still had to scan through the code to find the implementation, mm-hmm. but I knew exactly where to find the file.
Yeah. And, you know, the things we mentioned about partial files and so on and so forth, they do add complexity.
Mm-hmm.
That the biggest challenge that leveraging partial files in these multiple heads give you is there is no one place you can go to see the total sum of your implementation.
Yeah.
And that is a little bit challenging. However, that said, it was more readable than having lots of pound ifs. So there's a trade-off there. And as we said before, there is no silver bullet. Whatever way makes sense in the context, run with it.
That's right. Having said that, copying us is a good idea. I mean, honestly.
Because we are all around stuff.
We didn't do anything stupid. I mean, maybe a thing or two, but not too much. I mean that honestly, though. I mean, that's one of the reasons we put this together, was to make sure that, what if we did put the files here? What if we did put all of our services like that? What if we did use it like that? And hey, it does work. Your application might be bigger. It might be quite a bit smaller. But even a small application can be laid out similar to this and feel comfortable. And it also allows you to go from project to project and have a frame of reference so that they all have a similarity to it.
Exactly.
All right. Let's look back and just look at what we talked about at this module.
Yeah, we went through an introduction to Solarizer, kind of demoed the implementation as it stands today. We then went through an activity that sort of simulated receiving a design and doing a decomposition into XAML. We then turned around and said, okay, now we've got the XAML and we've got the idea of the data and the objects that's in there. Let's break this down into view models and work out how that maps out to the views themselves. And then we went into a bit of a diatribe about how we would organize the solution and our passionate belief in structure.
Yep. Organizing your source files is more important than developing them. That's a pretty awesome t-shirt to make, I suppose.
Well, you'd wear it.
I would wear it. Yeah. All right. That's the end of this session. Let me say a couple things before you guys take off. The first one is, at the end of this day, we're going to have a quick Q&A with you who stay for the live chat, right? And so if you're asking questions, you probably are already enjoying Paul and Nick answering those questions with a lot of authority. Those guys are really smart and really, really awesome, right? They're sort of our SMEs to go to. There's a lot of people on the chat that are really awesome. And we appreciate them. We appreciate the questions that you're asking. We read through those over the break, and it's pretty impressive the type of questions and commentary and the discussions that are going on. Really like that. So some of your key ones, your big ones, they can try and stump us on the final part of the day.
Yeah.
You can ask a challenge handful
thrown.
Of questions. A couple of great sessions are about to come up. We're going to talk about what's the next one?
I have no idea.
We're going to talk about service implementation.
Number five.
It's a big deal, right? It's a really big deal. Probably one of the most important sessions that we'll have today. And then we'll go into MVVM framework.
That doesn't
right
mean
after
you'll
that.
Leave after that one.
No, because right after that, we're talking about the MVVM framework and its direct and specific implementation on the on store apps. So it's really great. We're going to take a, we'll make it a 6-minute break. We'll come back at the top of the hour.
I have a 10-minute timer.
Then we're going
what a punk.
10 minutes.
All right.
That's what you get for ad-libbing.
Well, we will take a 9-minute break and see you guys soon. Thanks.